Your dad was John McCain.
Yes. My dad was a huge music fan. I'm going to tell you right now, my dad loved Willie Nelson. And people are like, you can't say you liked Willie Nelson because he dodged his taxes, blah, blah, blah. Well, he loved Willie Nelson. He did.
Everybody thinks they can do it. How can I become a professional wrestler? You really can't.
I pulled out the gun and I shot two times.
We have a complicated family. We were all raised to argue with each other with intensity, with passion, but also to love each other.
This is WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome to WTMJ Conversations. I'm your host, Libby Collins. Robin Greenfield has been described as an activist and social reformer, a servant to earth, humanity, plants, and animals, the Robin Hood of modern times, the Forrest Gump of ecology, and the best kind of crazy. But we're going to let you decide how to define him, because joining us is Robin Greenfield. And Robin, let's start out, because you're a Wisconsin guy. You were born in what, Ashland?
Yeah, born in Ashland. I'm a Wisconsin native. And I have to say, I absolutely love Wisconsin. And I'm so grateful. I've been traveling for the last 15 years. And I just moved back to Wisconsin this summer. And I'm just so elated to be here.
What, you grew up, what, right by Lake Superior, wasn't it?
Yeah, I grew up on 3rd and Beezer, two blocks from what we call the Hot Pond. And so my second home was fishing at the Hot Pond. And then once I was a little older, it was going over to Prentice Park, where I would catch frogs and turtles and go fishing. So Lake Superior is a place that is coursing through my veins, and the land of Wisconsin is ingrained into all of my DNA.
So I take it you had sort of a typical Wisconsin kid upbringing.
You know, actually, part of what got me here today is that I've always felt, when I was younger, I always felt like an outsider, actually. First of all, my mom and dad are not from Wisconsin. We were the only Greenfields in Wisconsin, so I didn't have any relatives here. And then my mom's side of the family is Jewish. So we grew up Jewish in a very Catholic, Christian-dominated place. We're very low income. It was my mom and us four kids and no real support from the dads. And so I always felt like a outsider as a young person. And I don't know if I would have identified it as a Wisconsinite at that time. But that's a big part of what drove me to get out of Wisconsin and to explore and to find my deepest self, actually. So I'm very grateful that as a young person, I didn't feel a sense of belonging.
Well, you got your degree in biology.
Yep.
Lacrosse, okay. And then you moved to California. What drew you to the Golden State?
Oh, well, as many Wisconsinites can relate to, it was warm weather that drew me to California. I really wanted to live somewhere warm, and I've always been passionate about water. Of course, we have a lot of water here, but the ocean is something that very much drew me. I studied aquatic science in university, and so I've just always been very drawn to the water, and I was drawn to being able to be in a place where I could sort of create my own self. In Wisconsin, there's often sort of a restrictive societal way of, you know, there's this one way of doing things.
How do you mean?
Well, just to give you an example, growing up here, to not drink a beer on a Sunday afternoon, it was like you'd get flack for it. People were like, why don't you have a beer in your hand? And then I was exploring being vegetarian at that time, and at every meal, it's like, where's the beef? No beef, no cheese, no milk. And honestly, I love meat and I love milk, but to be yourself here is a little harder because there is more of this sort of status quo that this is kind of the way things are. Of course, compared to, you know, California, where you can just be yourself more easily.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
Billions of people are suffering at the expense of our overconsumption.
Environmental activist Robin Greenfield says the American dream is everybody's worst nightmare.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with environmental activist Robin Greenfield. All right, so now you're in California. And you said you were drawn there because of the ocean. But there must have been other things that brought you to the state.
Well, actually, the reason I ended up in San Diego is because there was a guy actually from Naperville, Illinois, who wanted to partner on a marketing company. And he had a partner out there. And so I actually went out there to get involved in this marketing company. And that's actually the reason why. It was an opportunity to get into business and make a whole bunch of money.
But then you became an environmentalist. How did that all come about?
Yes. So in 2011, I was living in many ways a fairly typical U.S. American lifestyle. I was very focused on material possessions and financial wealth. I had a, you know, a new car. I had a three-bedroom apartment just a few blocks from the beach. I had my nice clothes. And I was pursuing what I had been sold as sort of the American dream, you know, to have nice things and to be successful. And I had a goal of being a millionaire by the time I was 30, which I was really on track for. Which one note is, in 2013, it was a little more meaningful to be a millionaire. We've had, things have even changed a little in the last, you know, or that was 2011. So in the last decade and a half. But so I was on this track to become a millionaire by the time I was 30 and to be successful in that regard. I had, you know, a lot of friendship, romantic, you know, romantic relationships. And then something happened and I realized I wanted to radically transform my life.
What happened?
Well, I started to watch some documentaries. I started to read some books. I started to talk to some different people. And I learned that this American dream I was living is actually the world's nightmare. And it's also the nightmare for literally billions of people that are suffering at the expense of our overconsumption. So as a statistic, in the United States, we have 5% of the world's population, but we consume 25% of the world's resources. What's sold here, the American dream, as sort of normal, is actually incredibly extreme. And all of this is hidden behind advertising budgets, behind closed doors. And so I realized the food I was eating, the car I was driving, the stuff I was buying, the trash I was creating, the money I was spending, my life investments, it was all tied to systems of destruction and exploitation, oppression. And I was taking part in that with every single, almost every action I was taking.
So what did you do?
Well, at first I definitely felt some overwhelm. Some, you know, depression, some anxiety, probably a little anger too. You know, you'll realize that the government's lied to us about a lot of things for a long time, and so have a lot of our corporations and our societal norms and structures. So definitely some anger. But I actually felt mostly empowered, excited, and inspired. The reason why is these books I was reading, like, you know, The Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan, these documentaries I was watching, like Food, Inc., they didn't just tell me the problems, they shared solutions. They gave me examples of other people doing things a different way. They plugged me into environmental nonprofits that are really doing something to heal our relationship with the earth. And so I just decided that I was going to take my life back one step at a time to try to live, you could say, in harmony with the earth, try to live sustainably. It turns out that is a very radical thing to do in our society, to try to actually, truly live in harmony with this earth.
Coming up at WTMJ Conversations.
Okay, I'm swimming in lakes and rivers. Does the water need to be coming out from a faucet over your head in order to clean yourself?
Environmental activist Robin Greenfield says he spent a year without taking a shower.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
I'm your host, Libby Collins. Let's return to our conversation with environmental activist Robin Greenfield. You said you had a three-bedroom apartment a couple blocks from the beach. You had a car, and I'm assuming it was a pretty nice car.
Yeah.
You were on your way to become a millionaire,
yep.
So you must have had IRAs, 401ks,
yeah,
whatever, bank accounts.
Yeah, some of those.
What did you do? I mean, did you just give up everything?
I did. I let most of it go.
How?
It wasn't,
I mean, what did you do?
I made it my full-time job to unravel the web of consumerism in which I had 25 years of wrapping myself into, and to, with each strand that I broke, create a new strand, a strand of sustainable living, of simple living. So I just looked at everything I was doing. I analyzed every facet of my life, which you can't do in a day. This is days, weeks, months, and multiple years. It was my full-time job to transform my life.
What did you give up first?
Well, I remember just looking at the plastic Tupperware containers in my kitchen, a lot of the plastic-wrapped foods. I started to buy less packaged foods. There was a food co-op in San Diego. I started to go there. I started to ride my bike more and drive the car less. I looked at all of the stuff in my house, and I would ask the question, do I actually use this? Does this bring real value to my life? And I just consistently would downsize, shed, and let go of stuff, including my Old Spice deodorant. I said, do I really need this? Or am I just wearing this because they have millions of dollars convincing me that I need this in order to be loved?
One of the first things you gave up was deodorant?
Might have taken a few months. Maybe not the first thing, but it was early. I learned that we're covering our body with all sorts of toxic chemicals. If you really look at the ingredients, you'll see that we are coating our body with all sorts of toxic chemicals. And you learn and you realize, I mean, now fast forward, I know that we only exist because of the bacteria on our bodies. And if we were successful with this war on germs, we would actually destroy ourselves. We now know that our gut microbiome is actually as important as any other aspect of our body, and that we are, some statistics say, we are 15 times more bacterial cells than we are human cells. So it all goes back to that original question of what are we? Who are we? What are we really doing? And my answer was, well, we're destroying the only home we have.
When did you decide to start becoming an activist, where you really got out and you said, I'm going to show others the way I'm living, and I think we'd all be happier if we all lived this way?
Yeah, I decided that from the day that I decided to change my life. So from the very beginning, I shared my journey of breaking free and of reconnecting.
How did you do that?
Well, this was 2011, so it was a different time, but I used Facebook back when it was just a Facebook profile, you know, and I just, you know, started to put some things out there. I started to write a little bit. Wasn't really the time of videos yet, but I started to do a little bit of video. And so just kind of tracking my transition to a more sustainable life. But from the beginning, I knew I was going to embark on environmental adventures that were designed to catch people's attention.
What was the first adventure?
First adventure was to bike across the United States from California to Vermont on a bamboo bicycle and try to have no negative environmental impact the whole 4,700 miles.
So how do you do that?
Well, you analyze every single thing you're doing and then find alternative ways to do it. So for example, for food, the idea was I would only eat local, organic, unpackaged food. If I created any garbage, I had to carry that garbage all the way across the country with me, which would make me look at every single wrapper. For water, I couldn't use water from in the faucets, only water that I harvested from lakes and rivers and such. So, of course,
you gave up showers?
I actually ended up, my first really viral thing that I did, it was an article I wrote for Huffington Post called Lessons Learned from a Year Without Showering.
Your friends must have thought that was interesting.
So, you know, over the years, I've gained a lot of friends and I've also lost some friends. There's certainly some people who have looked at what I'm doing and they are, you know, not so into it.
I'm wondering if you don't take a shower for a year, that must change your, well, you kind of put it when you said your geome, the things that are on your body, that changes it when you don't shower for a year.
It does. And so, but my whole thing is, okay, I do a lot of things that are designed to grab attention, but then talk common sense and say, okay, I'm swimming in lakes and rivers. Does the water need to be coming out from a faucet over your head in order to clean yourself?
Did you use soap?
At first, I used a little bit of soap, and I used a biodegradable soap, and then I learned, oh, you don't want to do that because it's adding phosphates and nitrogen to the water. If you do that, you want to practice leave no trace, and you want to go away from the water. You want the soap to go to the soil where the microbes can integrate it. But anyway, I did use that at first, and then over time, I learned that we don't need nearly what we think, that the human body is not inherently dirty. That's my deep belief.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
I first moved from the biggest bedroom in the apartment to the smallest bedroom. Then I moved into the 6x6 closet as I continued to downsize.
You lived in the closet?
In the 6x6 closet. And then I...
When did you come out of the closet? Environmental activist Robin Greenfield goes off the grid and lives in a tiny house.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
And I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is environmental activist Robin Greenfield. Now, you said that you went over 4,000 miles and you did this on a bamboo bike. I would imagine the weather was different in places that you went. Is it true? Because I looked at your feet when you walked in the studio. You're not wearing shoes.
Right now, I'm wearing shoes-ish.
They're not really shoes.
You know, I think they're shoes. They're homemade. It's a wool knitted and then felted upper and then a deer leather lower sewed on with deer sinew with wool socks underneath. I just finished these shoes last night, so I'm just
made them.
Just finished them.
All right, so when did you give up conventional shoes, I guess is my question.
Well, being barefoot has been a huge part of my journey. I read Born to Run by, I think, Christopher McDougall early on in my awakening, and I learned, just as an example, there's actually some studies that show that once our shoes get over $100, we actually have more injuries to our feet, not less. And you look at companies, some of these big companies, and it's very clear that their priority is profit, not necessarily the health of the people. And so I started to question, yeah, do I really need these shoes? Are they really beneficial to my body? And I just started to be barefoot more and more. And so for the last 15 years, I just only wear shoes if I need to. And when I say need to,
but there's shoes like the ones you just described.
Most of the time I'm barefoot.
I mean, you never put on a pair of Nikes.
There are some unique circumstances when I do.
Oh, really? So you occasionally will indulge yourself.
For example, if I show up in a really cold climate and I don't have any shoes, I might go to a thrift store and get some shoes. But my life is constantly changing in chapters. Now I've gotten to the point where everything I'm wearing is homemade, natural fiber, and naturally dyed. And I'd like to never put on a pair of industrial shoes again. But there could be a circumstance where for a moment I choose to.
Now, another thing that you gave up was that 3-bedroom apartment that was close to the ocean,
yeah,
which a lot of people would give their first child for. But you said no. And you actually started living in tiny houses before we were even talking about tiny houses.
Yeah, I first moved from the biggest bedroom in the apartment to the smallest bedroom. Then I moved into the 6x6 closet as I continued to downsize.
You lived in the closet.
In the 6x6 closet. And then I...
When did you come out of the closet?
I think if you asked my mom, she'd say that I've always been a little bit out of there. So then in 2015, yeah, I moved into a 50-square-foot tiny house. So it wasn't tall enough to stand in.
Smaller than the studio.
Yes, much smaller than the studio. It was smaller than I wanted, but I found it on Craigslist for $1,000. And it was basically a glorified like kid's playpen or doghouse. But I was living in a warm climate, San Diego, and I thought, I'll go for it. I'll really test myself and how simply I can live.
I hate to ask this, but I assume it didn't have plumbing.
No, absolutely not. So
when you live in a tiny house, how do you handle those
I mean,
issues?
A lot of people who have tiny houses have all of the appliances and everything. But for me, I wanted to live off the grid. So my water then came from harvesting rainwater. That was all of my drinking water at home. And then it was all a gray water system. So all the water that I used in my kitchen and it had all the food scraps, that would go onto my garden to water the garden and add those nutrients to the garden. So I'm all about creating systems that remove money from our lives, demonetize our lives, and plug us into a relationship with that land that actually improves the land.
You mentioned giving up money, and I understand you ended up in Brazil with $40?
That sounds about right.
We have two questions, how and why?
Well, what you're speaking about in particular, the little bit of a backstory, I started to do some adventures without money in order to do a couple things. One, test my ability to live without money, test my skills and my resourcefulness skills. But also, my first time, I flew down to Mexico with no money, the clothes on my back, and I had to get home to a large degree also on the kindness of others. And the reason for that is because when you turn on the TV, a lot of channels, they'll be trying to tell us that our neighbors to the south are people to fear and that our global neighbors are people to fear. I don't believe that. So I landed there largely dependent upon the kindness of others. And it was my way of saying, look, the majority of people out there are truly good and we can break free from this negativity bias of focusing on just what you see. If it bleeds, it leads on the news, and know that actually, there's so much good news and there's so many good people out there. And then as far as Brazil, that got picked up as a show by Discovery Channel. So I, that time, went down to Brazil and had to travel over 10 weeks through South America with no money.
You have a knack for getting noticed. And I'm thinking, you said, you know, you had an article early on in HuffPost. You got Discovery Channel to follow you around South America. What I find interesting is you said at the beginning, you originally went to California because you were starting a marketing company.
Yeah.
So do you still have this marketing company to promote your lifestyle?
No, I dissolved the company about 10 years ago because I have, to a large degree, dissolved money from my life. I've made a lifetime commitment to earning less than the federal poverty threshold and donating 100% of my media income from books, TV, etc. to grassroots organizations and activists doing the work. I do run a nonprofit called Regeneration Equity and Justice. And so money is still in my life, but I decentralize it to the largest degree possible from my own personal being and design it to try to use money as a true tool for positive transformation.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
I sat naked in Griffith Park until someone lent me a blanket.
Environmental activist Robin Greenfield talks about the month he lived in a public park wearing nothing but a smile.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
And I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is environmental activist Robin Greenfield. Are you using this not-for-profit to get noticed? I mean, what's the goal of the not-for-profit?
Oh, the not-for-profit. Well, we run numerous programs. So we run community fruit trees. And one of the things I'm currently working on is the 1 million community fruit trees initiative. So over the next decade, we're planting 1 million fruit and nut trees through a grassroots collaborative effort of thousands of people that are going to grow trees and plant trees together. And then over the years, we've done the Free Seed Project. We've provided garden starter kits to over 40,000 people with low income to be able to grow their own food. So some of my activism is funded by the nonprofit, where it is covering the basic costs of maybe doing a speaking tour or publishing a book. And then some of the funds go directly to resources that are going to the people. And then also a lot of what we do is we have raised funds to distribute to partner organizations that are working on the same initiatives that we are.
Let's go back to when you decided to live off the grid. You were in the tiny house, but you decided to even give up your tiny house and you lived in a park in Los Angeles?
Well, there's 10 years in between there, but there's a lot of overlap in between there. But so I have been experimenting in what people would call minimalism. For me, it's always just been living simply. Mahatma Gandhi is one of my greatest influences, and he says, "Live simply so others may simply live." This is at the core of my being, is to live simply outside of systems of destruction and exploitation and to build community and have relationships with the world around me. So one way to do that is to have no possessions. If you have no possessions, you need to have a relationship with people and the world around. So last year I started the walk. I walked from Canada to Los Angeles with everything I own on a little baby stroller, actually, to take the weight off my back. And when I arrived in LA, I gave away everything I owned. I literally mean every physical possession that I had. And I sat naked in Griffith Park until someone lent me a blanket to cover up with.
You just sat down in a public park? Were you afraid of getting arrested?
Not afraid of getting arrested because...
Concerned about it.
It would have been a bit of a nuisance. However, I do have a lot of privilege that I don't have to be concerned about this. But for me, being in jail would be a great opportunity to practice non-attachment and living simply and just being outside of my control and comfort zone. So there would be a lot of benefit if that were to happen, actually.
Were you hoping to get arrested?
No, not hoping, because I had plenty that I could do in the park and I had a whole schedule. So I didn't.
And you sat there without any clothes?
For about 5 minutes or so. And I had a palm leaf. I put a palm leaf over myself after a little while to help out with that. You know, I'm not afraid of the human body. I don't think there's anything wrong with the human body. And so, yes, that was a 3-month experiment of non-ownership. And I had already gotten rid of even my passport, driver's license, birth certificate, and social security card. So I literally had no physical possessions. And that was a deep, deep practice of faith, of, you know, relationship, of community, and of letting go.
Did anybody in a position of authority come and check on you and say, what are you doing here?
The Griffith Park Rangers knew I was there, and they would, time to time, they'd be looking for me. They never found me where I was sleeping. They'd have to find me in the act of sleeping in order to kick me out, because during the day when they saw me, I was just a person in the park.
How did you keep them from finding you asleep?
I had a good sleeping spot. I was, as a person with a lot of, you know, with pretty good physical ability, I climbed up into the canyon. And honestly, I had a $1 million spot in Griffith Park. I had a beautiful, wonderful spot. The coyotes would visit me in there. It was actually one of the most peaceful, joyous couple months of my life.
And why did you end then? If it was such a wonderful experience, why did you decide to not live in the park anymore?
Well, okay. I always, for a long time, wanted to get to this point of literally owning nothing, having nothing. Like Mahatma Gandhi had, I think, 11 possessions towards the end of his life. And a lot of the, you know, sort of spiritual teachers I've learned from have very little. And I've been drawn to that for a very long time. I wanted to ideally for 2 years own nothing. And 4 months is what it ended up being, was not nearly enough. But the reason I didn't go for longer is because in large part, I wanted to embark on what I'm doing at this moment. And this to do this with owning nothing would be really, really hard.
Before we get to what you're doing now, there was another thing that you did that got a lot of attention. And that was you dressed in garbage.
Oh, yes.
You did that more than once, I think, too.
Yes. 2016 in New York City and 2022 in Los Angeles. And so saying dressed in garbage really doesn't tell what it was. I was the garbage. I had become to a point where I was that garbage. There was no separation. So what it was is for 1 month, I lived like the average person, eating, shopping, consuming, just like so many of us are used to. But with one big exception, I had to wear every piece of trash that I created. I had a specially designed suit made with clear pockets from feet to neck. Trash me is what I called it.
Oh, trash me. I was going to say instead of fashion, it was
trash. Oh, okay. Yeah, it was partially inspired by Super Size Me. So that's why I called it Trash Me. He ate McDonald's. And I said, how can I create a visual that will help people to really understand just how much trash one of us creates? Rather than telling anybody what's right or wrong or good or bad, I just floated along in the breeze of consumerism. I went to McDonald's. I went to Whole Foods. I went to the movie theaters. I rode the metro. I just lived a pretty typical life and had to wear every piece of trash that I created. The average person creates 4.5 pounds of trash per day, so that's 135 pounds a month. I didn't keep up with that. I made 87 pounds of garbage, but I was a visual of the truth behind our consumerism and the reality of what if there is no away. And people would walk up to me and they'd say, I know I'm from New York City, so I'm supposed to have seen everything, but I have to ask, what are you doing? And I'd say, just living like the average person and wearing my garbage. And the light bulb would go off in their mind and they'd say, oh, that's me. That's what I would look like if I held on to my garbage.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
I'm living my passion, you know.
Environmental activist Robin Greenfield answers the question, what does your family think of you?
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
I'm Libby Collins. Today's conversation is with environmental activist Robin Greenfield. Does anybody ever ridicule you?
Only millions of people. I was on Breitbart, I remember, sometime back. I don't even know if that's still a thing. But because what I do is pretty out there, I get involved in some antics. My job is to create a ruckus that creates critical thought for many people. But so, yeah, and it's like I take things to the limit. And I'm constantly looking at, okay, what's the right level of limit? Because I want to reach people. I want people to see this, to hear this, and to ask questions. I want them to actually say, am I living the life that I truly want? Are my actions in alignment with my beliefs? And my job is to shake things up, to show that this norm is not normal. But at the same time, I have that. It's like, okay, how far do you go in a way where people are going to receive it and be able to stick with the message?
So what are you doing now?
So right now, I'm immersed in a year with no grocery stores, no restaurants, not even a garden. The earth is my garden. So for 1 year, I'm foraging every bite of my food and medicine, the fat, the protein, the salt, the oil, the spices, the calories, everything that goes into my mouth, everything that I eat, all of my medicine for the entire year is what's growing freely and abundantly. And I'm based right here in Wisconsin.
How do you do that with all the snow on the ground?
Well, the key is, like people have done for thousands of years, is you harvest the abundance of spring, summer, and fall. You store that, you know, that for now with modern technology, that includes refrigerators or freezers. For me, it's dehydration and canning. I have a lot of, you know, I have a whole pantry full of stored foods, you know, lots of wild vegetables, greens, mushrooms, venison, fish.
You said early on that you left Wisconsin because it was kind of closed-minded.
Hmm.
Why are you back here?
Why am I back in Wisconsin? Well,
are we still closed-minded?
You know, I'm getting to know Wisconsin. I'm on tour right now. I'm out with the people big time. And of course, I would never generalize a whole group of people. There's a lot of people in Wisconsin who are very stuck in their ways that don't want to hear anything except for what's going to keep them comfortable and happy and living their status quo. But of course, we have hundreds of thousands of people that have awoken to the reality that the American dream is the world's nightmare. There's millions of people here who stand up for the people, for the planet, for the plants and animals. And the reality is that Wisconsin has historically had one of the strongest environmental movements in the entire country. And that's because we know the beauty. We've seen the beauty, and we know that we don't want to lose this beauty that we have. So I absolutely love being in Wisconsin. And one thing I love about being in Wisconsin is I get to interact with people that have all different belief systems. And we don't even know, you know, we don't even know that who you voted for, because we have a shared relationship to the water, to the land. And I think that's really important. It helps to break down some of the polarization. That's one of the great issues of our time, and have things that we can relate on. And I see a lot of that in Wisconsin.
How much time do you devote to thinking about how to get attention for your cause versus actually doing what you do?
Well, the good news is that I have got things fairly well figured out now, where I don't have to spend too much time thinking about how to get the attention. And if I'm completely honest, I grew up as a child who wanted attention. I was the class clown starting in fifth grade. I was nominated the class clown. I've always been an entertainer for a long time. And so when I woke up in 2011, I said, I still want to meet my basic human needs, to belong, to be acknowledged, to be loved, to have meaning and purpose. This is something every single person listening right now is, every moment is working on meeting these basic needs. What I said is, I'm no longer willing to meet these basic needs in a way that exploits and steals from others' ability to do that. And so I'm still on that path. There's still a good amount of ego, and I'm, you know, currently I'm chipping away at that ego, but it's still there.
Do you consider yourself a researcher, a scientist, an eccentric?
Most of all, a human, I would say. I mean, my mission aside of helping us to shift our societal ways, my other mission is just to be human, to be the most authentic human being that I can be, to truly be myself, to love myself. I consider myself an explorer of integrity, an explorer of truth. And but most of all, I just want to be a human being in a time where we genuinely don't know how human humans will be with the advance of artificial intelligence and implanted devices. It's possible in our lifetime that we will start to actually question, how human are we? So this is very actually relevant. We're on the precipice of that. And so we've already lost a lot of that, like the core of being a human. And so that's for me. I want to be a human being who belongs on this earth.
We started, and you talked about your mom, you talked about your brothers. Has anybody in your family ever said, Robin, what are you doing?
You know, I have had one family member that was married into the family who basically said, I'm no longer a family member. But so beautifully we reconnected this year, and I was so grateful for that. There was some polarization there, and we reconnected, and it was beautiful. What am I doing? So again, I'm all about honesty, and the honest answer is that none of them would say that because they know I'm going to do what I want, and there's not too much point in saying that. But do they have concerns? Absolutely. There's definitely plenty of times people are concerned, but I've been doing it for long enough now that as far as family goes, well, at least on my mom's side, I'm mostly just in touch with my mom's side of the family. They're all pretty into the fact that I'm living my passion, you know? And the good thing is, as people who were never like very normal, we were always kind of the outsiders. We've always been very accepting. And as long as we're happy, we're going to accept each other's paths. And so I have a supportive family that I'm very grateful for. I didn't appreciate my mom growing up, but now I appreciate my mom so much. And the thing that I appreciate about her parenting the most is she never believed she owned me. She never forced me or tried to convince me that I had to be any particular person. She let me be me. And I think that is a really, really powerful thing to do as a parent. And I'm really grateful to her for that.
Robin Greenfield, we're grateful that you were here today.
Is our time up already?
It is.
that was a joy.
We've been talking with environmental activist Robin Greenfield. Oh, we talked about the time he dressed up in all of his trash, and also the year he went without taking a shower. And let's not forget the month he spent naked in a public park. Now, if you joined us late and you want to hear our entire conversation with Robin, go to WTMJ.com and share today's show with your friends and family. You'll also find a partial transcript courtesy of eCourt Reporters. For WTMJ Conversations, I'm Libby Collins.